This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. Get involved with the debate by tweeting at Blue Moon Podcast and check out exclusive interviews on bluemoonpodcast.com. It's your club and this is your show.
It's the end of days. Manchester City have dropped points to a newly promoted side, and so early in the campaign as well. They'll never win the title from here now, or something like that. Anyway, welcome to the Blue Moon Podcast, where we know that City's record is actually still slightly better than it was at this stage last season, and we all know how that one ended up. On this week's show, we'll get our claws into how Wolves were able to give City such a fright at Molineux. We'll also be asking what lessons can be learnt from the performance and where it leaves the club in their defence of the title. It's also 10 years this week since the start of Sheikh Mansour's takeover at Eastland, so we'll be casting an eye over the previous decade and discussing the impact it's had both on and off the pitch. With Saturday evening's tie against Newcastle to preview, a look at the Champions League draw and your questions to answer and ask the panel as well, we'd better get cracking. I'm your host, David Mooney, and I'm joined in the studio this week by two Manchester City fans, starting off with Kieran Murray.
Hello, David. Hello, listeners.
And Kieran Clark.
Oh, yeah. You all right?
How you doing?
Buzzing.
Good, good, good. So we start off then with the trip to Wolves. I think easy first question, because why wouldn't it be easy? Did they deserve to win?
Probably, yeah. I don't think it was a great performance. Their goal was handball. We hit the woodwork, which I think is a very, very Liverpool excuse, saying hitting the woodwork a few times. I think our finishing wasn't as great as it could have been in the first half. But I think overall we just shaded it. But at the same time, you can't really argue too much with the point, because I think they're one of the best teams that we will face this year.
Well, I was going to say, Kieran says they deserve to win. Kieran, I mean, City were sloppy, weren't they? They didn't deserve to win.
I don't think we did deserve to win. I think a point was the fair result.
How dare you?
Good, healthy debate to kick us off. I like that.
Yeah, I'll kill you. Wolves look great. They're being hyped as finishing top half of the table. People are saying top seven even. So,
I mean, give it a few weeks, they'll be title contenders. Yeah, I mean, true. It's not. Yeah,
but they're believing that hype and playing and they're playing with that belief. We had a draw with them last year, if you remember.
No, we won that. Do you not remember?
We had.
It was part of our winning streak.
It was the winning streak. It was a win.
We won that.
Can we take some time to applaud that Wolves side? Nuno kind of has Pep's number a little bit, I think, and set up. They were so organised. They look great. They caught us on the counter a number of times. In the middle of the park, that young man who we're linked with, Ruben Neves.
Neves, yeah.
Him and Moutinho just looked really tasty. And I thought they dug into us. And do you know what? Up against Fernandinho and Gundogan, they sort of had us in the middle of the park.
But how can you sit here and say that when, as Kieran says, quite rightly, City hit the post and bar three times, they forced the goalkeeper into a number of good saves, City deserved to win?
That's very true. I think with a little bit of luck.
Obviously, we were below par for what we can do, considerably under par. But that's still enough to win most Premier League games. And I think we were well below par for what we are capable of. And I still think that we just deserve to shade it. But you can't really argue too much with the draw, because Wolves played well.
So you've been too level-headed there, because what I was going to throw back at you is, how can you sit here in good conscience and say that City deserved to win when Wolves created a number of good chances, Edison made a couple of saves?
He made one really good save,
after he slipped.
But there was a handball and offside goal that Wolves got. So, you know, you can't really argue too much with that.
Well, you see what I'm saying? This is one of those, it's very rare this happens, but it's one of those games where there is very clearly two sides to the coin. You see what I mean? Because City were sloppy.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing us just as sloppy as that in the past couple of seasons.
But we were still better than them.
Okay. But I don't think we were.
Just because we were below what we should be at and below what our average is doesn't mean that we didn't deserve to win the game.
Yeah, I think they're set up in such an organised way that they fought us tooth and nail. They had a go, and they have the players, the manager, and the ground and the fans are fired up for it. And for many sides to have a go against City at the minute doesn't get them anywhere, but they are adequately equipped to have a go, and they gave us a good fight and it paid off for them. in my eyes. Now, they got lucky, and also their keeper had an absolute stormer of a game.
Their keeper had an absolute worldie of a game. But he like, again, no disrespect to Wolves, even the position that they're in now. Like some Moutinho and Rui Patricio still, you know, that they are really, really big coups of signings for them. Mm-hmm. They are really, really top class. And they should be walking into any Champions League team. And the fact that they're at Wolves is a massive coup for them. And, you know, I was lamenting the fact that Patricio was playing for them. I think if they pretty much had...
I was lamenting the fact that Patricio played for them when he touched that Sterling one onto the bar. I thought it was flying in.
I think maybe one or two other keepers in the league would save that.
I'm not sure I'd back Edison to save that.
I wouldn't back Edison to save it. I'd have Patricio. Can't think. Maybe Lloris. Can't think of anyone else that I'd have.
Wouldn't even fancy De Gea. De Gea is known for those kind of camera saves.
Well, he wasn't straight at him. So.
Well, exactly, yeah.
That's what I mean. I thought Neves played really well. What I thought Moutinho, because of his age, I thought his legs might have gone, but I thought, considering he was playing in the middle of the pitch, I thought he played really well.
Against a team that moves the ball all game as well, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think we moved the ball as well as we could have done.
We definitely didn't.
A lot, like, Gundogan got a lot of stick, and he didn't have a good game, but I think he got an unfair amount of criticism from some quarters, and then at the same time, because people like... you know, can recognise that he's a good player and stuff like that. He got an unbelievable amount of defence that he didn't deserve either. He's a good player who had a bad game, who hasn't particularly started the season that well, considering how the rest of the team's played. And I think you can recognise that he is a good player, but I don't think he should be starting week in, week out for us. But that's because of the high standards that we set ourselves.
There were moments in the middle as well, though, where you look at Company gave it away. Fernandinho gave it away. Company's first half was awful.
Company was the worst player on the pitch by a considerable distance on Saturday. But that's just what I was about to go into. But he didn't get half as near the amount of stake that Gundogan did.
Last year, it was so often that you looked at the whole entire City team and thought nobody had a bad game there. Everybody's performance was spot on. And in that game, there were three or four dodgy performances. So... lads, I'm kind of glad that this happened. That Wolves game.
But it has brought expectations
back down to earth. Yeah.
City still go into the rest of the season as favourites for the title. Yeah. They're still likely to go on and put in a great performance over the course of the season.
I thought Liverpool had already won the title.
Yeah, well, I was building to that in the introduction as well. I mean, we're not daft enough to sit here and say that the title's won in August.
Yeah, Pep's first season with the 10 games on the trot. 10 wins, wasn't it?
10 wins, yeah.
And then last season, it was nice to kind of restrict ourselves to
just the 18 wins on the trot.
Yeah. but to have a result that sort of brought us back to earth and there is work to be done. And we can kind of look at that game and go, right, okay, we sort of got our head of ourselves, beating Chelsea, then Arsenal, and then a huge victory at home against Huddersfield. Teams are going to set up and organise very well against us. They're going to have fire in their bellies. We are the champions.
My friend.
What I would like to say about Wolves, though, is, you know, in terms of the way that they set up, it wasn't just defensive.
Like, of course not, yeah.
They set up with a really... like, they set up really high and, like, considering, if you look at it on paper, they set up with five at the back, but they didn't really. And it wasn't really like a 3-5-2. It was more like a really high block with the three midfielders just bursting forward constantly. And I think if we play that game, like Guardiola mentioned, in November, I don't think Moutinho's got the legs to play that game in November.
Yeah, it was early enough in the season that they could really have...
yeah.
Risen to it.
Well, Kieran, you've mentioned Guardiola. Let's hear what Pep Guardiola had to say after the game.
It's a team that is well organised. That's why I'm not surprised, but I'm satisfied for how many chances we create against that teams in the season. Against system with 5-4-1, we had more problems than today to create chances. Our three posters in chances for the last pass or last shoot, the save for the keeper. In the same side, we concede. Normally, we control quite well the counter-attacks. We didn't control quite well today, and but it's a good point for us, because we knew it, the quality of the opponent, and I think we create enough chances to win the game, but it doesn't count, so at the end it's 1-1, but I'm not too many regrets. A little bit lack of rhythm sometimes, but we drop 2 points or we win 1 point, and nothing will change after 3 Premier League games. So winning or losing or drawing, so it's a long, long, long time, long road, and we have to continue in that way.
For a pledge of $2 a month, you can hear our weekly bonus show on a wide range of City topics. There's more details on patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Pep Guardiola speaking after the game with Wolves. I mean, Kieran, you mentioned the Wolves goal, the handball. Guardiola, I actually cut it out of the post-match press conference because he just was not being drawn on it. He basically kept saying, I'm not the referee, so don't ask me about it. But, I mean, let's talk about how City defended it, because there's an argument to say that it shouldn't go in at that point because City should get out to the ball and stop the cross a lot sooner.
I've not got that much of an argument, believe it or not, with their goal being given, because I think it was such a freak incident that I didn't spot it first time. None of the City players spotted it first time, even though obviously looking back at it, it's such a blatant handball that, you know, if VAR was a thing, then of course it would be overturned. But I've not really got too much qualms with that. I know we're kind of jumping ahead a bit, but what I have got qualms with is literally a minute later, Silva being just booted straight in the other, How on earth any referee anywhere cannot give that is absolutely appalling. It's 5 yards in front of him. He's looking right at somebody booting someone and he just doesn't give it. Purely because it just looked like he didn't want to. And I, even though obviously it is a black and white decision, the Wolves' goal, that it shouldn't be given, I've not really actually got that much argument towards it. We didn't defend it pretty well.
But I mean, he was offside.
No, that's what I mean. We didn't defend it pretty well. He was offside and it was a handball. The offside for me is more of a contentious thing that a linesman should be picking up. But it was so weird, that handball. It was such a weird incident that I've not really got that much problem with the actual handball, even though it is a kind of... Does that make sense?
I know what you mean. But I mean, on the other side of the fence, you can quite easily argue that City have defended it fine if they've caught him offside. It just hasn't been given. It should be spotted by the officials.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. As I say, it shouldn't have been a goal. But I think when you're us, you've got to kind of come back from adversity in those kind of situations. And to me, I think in a lot of games in seasons past, we wouldn't have even got a draw out of that once we went 1-0 down. And it would have been just 1-0 all day, no problem. I think the fact that we got the Laporte goal was remarkably resilient for a City team away from home compared to what we have been until last season. But yeah, the silver penalty for me, I cannot get over any referee anywhere not giving that as a penalty, apart from just not wanting to give it because it was that bad of a... It was a shocking decision.
Kieran, penalty for you, I assume?
I didn't really think it was a penalty.
Ah, get out of it.
I know. I was saying...
Does he kick the floor?
Silva?
Yeah.
Yeah, I sort of thought so. There were sort of four, like, sort of touch points in one, if you get what I'm saying. Neves had his hand on Silva's back. Silva, his one foot kicked the floor, one foot sort of went up into Neves's kind of, like, crotchal region, like, almost to kind of...
Solar plexus.
Crotchal.
Is that what your solar plexus are?
I don't know.
No, your solar plexus is under your rib cage, and I don't know what your crotchal is.
Yeah, so Silva
crotchal sounds painful, actually.
Like, but most of my friends who I was looking at, or most of the people who follow on Twitter while I was watching it, were like penalty. Everybody in WhatsApp was just like, that was stonewall, black and white. I don't really often disagree with people who see the game better than me.
I was too. You're the famous contrarian.
Yeah. But do you know what? I actually didn't think in real time it was that cut and dry. Too many sort of things happen at once. The one thing that would suggest that it was a penalty to me is David Silva's reaction. He got booked for dissent off the back of it.
David Silva doesn't do that.
He doesn't often do that. So he fully felt that he'd been aggrieved in some way. And was still arguing about it minutes later with young Neves.
The thing that made it a penalty was the fact that it was a penalty.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm going to throw forward then to the next penalty incident, though, with Aguero. And we all, every year we've said on this show, Aguero does not go down easily.
No, he does.
I don't like that when we're chasing the game to see our lads go down like that.
It's all square at that point, was it?
Yeah.
You can't say... When we won the league the first time, Dzeko goes down really easily in the Sunderland game for a penalty where we get it back to 3-3. We don't win the league because of that.
Mm.
And that's easily... Moments like that are easily forgotten if you're on the right side of it.
True.
It's easy to stand up and say at this point of the season when we're chasing a game against a newly promoted team.
I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
But... Yeah. I mean, let's switch it on its head. Let's say at that point the referee points to the spot. Do we all sit here and say, well, there was a touch on his back and, you know, he's been fouled there?
Well, yeah, I guess. But no. sometimes you get lucky, and Wolves rode their luck plenty of times in that game. But that would have been very, very lucky, outrageously lucky, if that one was given. The Silva one that I've just said wasn't a penalty was more of a penalty than the Aguero one.
It was a penalty.
that light hand on the shoulder as he's running, like, it can swerve you when you're running at pace. It swerve you off your momentum. But Aguero, he tried to buy that all day long, and no, there's absolutely no way that was a penalty.
Well, let's talk about the City equaliser, because it came from a free kick where Sterling knew the contact was coming and made it a free kick. Let's say. It's a great header, isn't it? I mean, you look at that. First off, it's a great delivery into the right area. It's a fantastic run. And just so much. It's one of those headed goals that you just look at and just think, what a header. You know what I mean?
It was one of them where just in the split second before it happens,
you know it's going in.
You could literally point at the part of the net where the ball is going to hit. You just know it's going to go in and the keeper's going to have no chance. It was a great goal. And it was good to see him get off the mark, because... He does look quite handy in the air, so you think he should be getting on some more of those kind of things. Because I know Stones did it a couple of times in the Champions League last year, and Kompany can do it. Obviously, Otamendi can do it, so it's good to have that kind of threat.
They've suddenly got quite a goal-scoring lot of centre-backs,
Considering the height of the rest of the team... It's nice to have centre-backs that can do that, because we've not really got height anywhere else.
And we know from Kompany's, you know, back catalogue of performances that if City really are struggling, Guardiola's not afraid of throwing him on as an emergency striker towards the end of the game. We saw that, what was it, the 1-1 against Everton, where he randomly came on as a substitute for the last 5 minutes up front?
I completely forgot about that.
I'd completely forgotten about Nicolas Otamendi until you've mentioned him there. Laporte has just been such a solid signing. And Otamendi got a couple of great goals last year, and very important goals. Champions League, Derby.
But he's the fourth choice centre-back.
Yeah, but he's absolutely the fourth choice centre-back now. And if Laporte's going to pop up with the odd goal, I know it was his first and he got off the mark, and we're only three games into the season. If he can be a goal-scoring threat as well as Stones or Kompany or whoever plays, that's fairly handy, isn't it?
Who would be your first choice to then?
Stones and Laporte all day. Yeah, absolutely all day.
All day.
How did you feel when Kompany... Sorry, I'm asking a question here, David.
We're not a dictatorship here. It's fine.
How did you feel when...
We totally are a dictatorship. I'll cut all this out later.
He's locked the door on us.
Send help.
See what happens when you try to ask a question. Like you're beat down. I know what you're doing. I know what your game is.
You're not asking this question, mate. I'm not going to let you.
Okay.
What game is that?
This one, Wolves. Kompany on the team sheet ahead of Stones. How did you feel about that?
I was a little bit disappointed. After the way that both Laporte and Stones had played in the games leading up to it, I was disappointed.
Why would he have named them?
I could see why he did it, because obviously, because Stones and Laporte have started well, but I think he should be looking to build that partnership more. But I can see he's looked at Wolves on paper and thought, they've got a couple of big lads at the back.
I think that the point is as well that City don't have a best 11 anymore.
Yeah.
They mix and match depending on what their game plan is and what the opposition are likely to do.
Yeah, when you think about Kyle Walker being dropped for Huddersfield.
And it worked perfectly.
Yeah, it absolutely did. So, yeah, I guess you can't think to yourself, oh, I'm out of the team, and, you know, get in a bit of a mood about it. So absolutely. And why not play your captain, who's brilliant? But Jesus, he had a shocker, that lad, didn't he?
One person that might have been in a bit of a mood with his performances so far this season. He looked rusty as hell when he came on. Was Leroy Sané? What's going wrong there?
I don't know whether it's something going wrong. I think it just looks like one of those players that needs a few games to get started, because like that's the this is the third season now where it just looks like after pre-season
he was injured in the first season, in fairness.
Yeah, no, but I mean, even when he come into the side, obviously he looked ridiculously exciting, but he didn't look up to speed. So the first season, obviously you forgive him because, you know, he's getting used to a new league, he's a young player and all that kind of stuff. Last year he started out of position because he was started as a wing back against Everton, and he didn't start particularly well. He came on against Liverpool when he scored twice. I think those two goals then gave him the confidence. He looks like he's starting here, and he just looks like one of those players that needs a catalyst at the start of the season, and as soon as he gets that, then it'll
spark from that. But he's got more competition this year. He's got Mahrez also occupying one of the attacking spots in the team, and he's got Mendy who's back.
I don't particularly like his attitude. And
you can really tell that you're a teacher.
Yeah. Well, he's done absolutely no work over the summer. He's swarmed back in here expecting. Yeah, no, I don't, as a 22-year-old, I don't think Leroy Sané takes his job very seriously. I think he's got a lot of growing up to do. I think he believes his own hype a little bit too much. I think he sees Pep as some sort of domineering ogre who just shouts at him all the time, and he can't really, like a spoiled teenager getting told to tidy his room. I don't think Leroy Sané, I think he's naturally gifted and a wonderful, wonderful footballer, but he could be the sort of high profile fallout. You know how Pep has had those at Barcelona and you know, in previous, some players don't actually take that well to Pep Guardiola. And I think Sané could be one of those.
What would you do? A few minutes outside the classroom, or down to the headmaster's office, or a couple of detentions, maybe?
It's a tough one because he's got so much natural ability, doesn't he? And he's just a really, really gifted talent. So you're sort of hamstrung by him as a manager, because no matter what you try to do, if you drop him, then that's cutting off your nose to spite your face, isn't it? Because he can offer you so much on the pitch, as we saw in flashes on Saturday afternoon. You know, when he gave the ball away two or three times, and then suddenly, magic, he came alive. He danced around six players with the ball. Aguero kind of got involved, the foul happened, and then we hit the bar in the 95th minute. So something could have happened from Leroy Sané. But I think he needs to sort of get his head in the game a little bit. Earlier on in the season.
One final question I want to kind of throw your way as well. Does City have a bit of a problem with the early kickoff when it's an away game? And I'm thinking Burnley last season, 1-1 draw. You know, Palace last season, last minute penalty, it was 0-0 in the end, and you know they could have lost it in the last minute. Bournemouth took a 97th minute winner.
Never noticed that. So that's a great point. Maybe it's me, because you know, like we all have our own lucky omens and unlucky omens.
I don't think it was you, but go on.
I think those are the last four games that I watched on the couch in my pants. So maybe that's an unlucky omen. Maybe I should get dressed.
Generally, that as life advice goes, that's up there. Get dressed.
Yeah, cut that out if you want.
Right, so we're moving on. And this weekend marks the 10-year anniversary of the start of the takeover by Sheikh Mansour. Since then, the club has transformed both on and off the pitch, and you get the feeling that things are never going to be the same again. Sam Roscoe's been looking at how things changed back in 2008.
10 years ago was a very different time. The Apple App Store was just 2 months old, and Android didn't exist. The investment bank Lehman Brothers was yet to collapse. The word vlog was a year off being added to the Oxford English Dictionary. And Manchester City were close to going into administration.
Quite simply, you had to go out and find new owners. And we spoke to, you know, Greek shipping tycoons, and we spoke to a few different guys, and you know, the wind came blowing through and we were in the right direction when we made contact with the guys from Abu Dhabi.
That's former City Chief Executive Gary Cook. Owner Taksin Shinawatra was on the run and his assets had been frozen. Cook explains how former chairman John Wardle was helping out.
We were in dire straits. We were shortly about to go into administration. There was a big challenge ahead. And John is a City fan through and through. And I've been public with this before, is that if it wasn't for John, I think we would have been in a much worse situation. And who knows, once you lose control and a football club goes into the hands of administrators, it can be very challenging.
He told us, despite how it looked, City were actually a good investment at the time.
Manchester City was great value for money, a big football club in a big city that was known as a footballing city. They say that 72% of all businesses, the value is in intangible assets, not necessarily all of the things that you're buying that you can fix and see. And they're actually the things like goodwill and the brand value and all of those things. And I think City fit the bill there.
Football historian and City fan Gary James was working at the club when the takeover happened. He thinks it's difficult to believe just how much has changed.
10 years isn't actually a long time in football. You know, it feels like a long time, but when you think about it, think back to, say, 1998. 10 years before that, not much had happened. Up and down a little bit. A couple of fifth-place finishes in the Premier League. But, you know, it was season after season was fairly normal. For City, the last 10 years have seen us go from struggling Premier League team to being champions in this way. And not just once, we've been champions 3 times. We've won the League Cup, we've won the FA Cup.
The sustained level of success is something Daniel Storey from Football 365 thinks is worthy of credit too.
It's allowed Manchester City to artificially bridge the gap to an established financial elite, both in the Premier League and abroad, which is something that is a lot harder to do in practice than it is in theory. Many other clubs have tried and failed to bridge that gap with wealthy owners, perhaps not as wealthy as Sheikh Mansour, but particularly wealthy owners, and they failed to do that.
And for Gary James, the takeover came out of the blue. He was meeting Gary Cook that morning about the club's museum.
His PA said to me, he's running a bit late, something's happening. Like, I'm thinking, oh yeah, he's, you know, where is he? Like, and then he came bouncing in, and I mean bouncing. I've never seen him so animated, so excited, right? And he went, Gaz. He'd never called me Gaz before, never, right? Gaz, we've got to call the meeting off. Something's happening. You're gonna love it.
Later on in the takeover process, Gary was called in to speak to the new chairman.
Gary Cook said, Gaz, he's gonna ask you lots of questions. Tell him the absolute truth. Don't try to hide our weaknesses. Don't try to say that we're better than we are. Tell him the absolute truth.
After the meeting, Gary came away feeling positive about the new owners.
He also said that we're not here for, you know, 5 years, a bit of glory or what you've seen. But he already talked about investing not just in players. He said we'll get lots of attention for buying players, but it's what else we do. So invest in the facilities.
Daniel Storey explains how that is worthy of recognition.
They've also invested in the wider framework of the club, not just the first team playing staff and management. They've invested in the academy, they've invested in the women's team, they've invested in the facilities at the club. And they've created a club that is a good news story on the pitch. It should also be said that they've invested in the local area. The community projects and the regeneration strategy that they've implemented in Manchester is pretty much like no other within English football, and they deserve applause for that.
On the pitch, though, is where the headlines were really being made. The first major move was on transfer deadline day in 2008. Rubinho signed, and it was the start of big-name players arriving at Eastlands. Gary Cook tells us how the attempt to sign Kaká the following January wasn't all just hot air.
There's a realism to knowing that you've got a very, very slight chance. But it was a representation of our ambition. And I think what it did was it made a lot of people go, well, hold on a minute. Maybe these guys are serious. Which impacts the players, it impacts the fans, it impacts the employees. And the world of football was starting to look a little different. All of a sudden, there was a new kid on the block.
He adds that it was a learning curve in those early days.
I look back on it now and people go, oh, what was all that about? Hey, learnt a lot. the club learned a lot, and I've actually bumped into Kaká and he said, you know, sometimes I wish I'd come. So we all have our point of view. I was allowed to have a point of view. I was allowed to say they bottled it because I thought they did.
In the years that followed, Mark Hughes, Roberto Mancini, Manuel Pellegrini and now Pep Guardiola have all spent big to build City into the force that they have become. They're three-time Premier League champions, plus three-time League Cup and one-time FA Cup winners in the Sheikh Mansour era. And they're the only English side to be ever present in the Champions League since 2011 as well. However, there is a but that comes with it all. Daniel Storey explains.
A mere fraction of research indicates that the human rights issues employed by the club's ownerships in their own country far fall short of, you know, decency that we would expect in England. Pointing that out is not trying to bring City down, it's not trying to victimise them, it's not trying to undermine their model, it's merely the truth.
He thinks that poses a moral question. Should fans care?
I could not criticise any Manchester City supporter who no longer attended games because they felt that it was inappropriate for them to do so on a moral judgment. And it would be nobody's place to, you know, to criticise that at all. But to many, football is an escape. And supporting a football club is a means of channeling that escape into something that they consider deeply meaningful.
But Daniel also doesn't blame fans who choose to ignore that side of things.
Choosing to ignore the behaviour of owners is something, therefore, that many supporters do, to lesser and greater degrees. And I would argue that with Manchester City's owners, it's to a greater degree. You know, should Chelsea supporters worry about Roman Abramovich's business practices? Should Manchester United supporters worry that the Glazer family financially supported Donald Trump? We all take a leave of morality when supporting a modern football club because, sadly, that is the reality.
He adds that fans also shouldn't be criticised for ignoring what happens behind the scenes.
Supporting a football club is not the same as supporting a football club's owner. Plenty of Manchester City supporters have a long-established and hardwired, emotional connection to their club that isn't held up by them winning trophies or lavishly investing on the club. And that emotional connection is not going to be eroded by the club's ownership model or their behaviour. If that sounds morally murky, then welcome to modern football.
Ultimately, everything City have achieved in the last decade wouldn't have been possible without the investment from Sheikh Mansour. But is there any truth to the argument that the club would be up the creek without a paddle if the owners walked away now? Gary James thinks not.
Now City is sustainable. And people say, oh, it's being propped up by a sponsorship deal with Etihad. Well, if Etihad go, there may well be British Airways, right? You know, a British Airways might come in and say, actually, we want to sponsor the club. The club is so far removed from what people thought it was or think it is. If the Sheikh decided to sell the club tomorrow, he's going to make a profit. Good luck to him. And the person who buys the club is going to buy a profitable football club.
And manager Pep Guardiola is under no illusions how important September 2008 was.
If you tell me in the next 8 years what is the big influence and is important, is Sheikh Mansour, no doubt about that. The manager we are, 1-2, the period we are, the players come, the players gone, but who decide to try to make, you know, this a step further, is the guys from Abu Dhabi who took over the club.
The last 10 years have certainly been eventful, and it's been exciting to watch how far City have developed in that time. With the long-term thinking that's been part of the on-the-pitch success over the last decade, you can't help but feel that the next decade will be just as fun as well.
Hi, this is David Bernstein, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
Sam Roscoe looking at 10 years of Sheikh Mansour. When you look back at where City were when they were taken over and where they are now, how do you feel? Because I don't think we take enough time to kind of step back and think about that sometimes.
It's gone poorly, hasn't it? Blinking heck. You have to pinch yourself sometimes, don't you? To win the Premier League 3 times is just, it's beyond your wildest dreams.
But I mean, think back to 2007. You never thought you'd see City win the league.
Oh, we were bit in the Sven season. It was great.
Under Sven, I thought we were going to win the league. I did, yeah.
You take the point, though, don't you?
Yeah, it's but even the year of the takeover was a bit bizarre because obviously it started amazing with that Chelsea game. Even though we got beat, it just felt like full of hope. But when
relegation zone by Christmas.
But Mark Hughes just did his best to ruin the whole thing, didn't he? He was just awful.
Did you have a bad feeling about Mark Hughes straight away, or were you enthusiastic and happy
when he got the job, or after the takeover?
When he got the job,
I thought he'd do all right, just because. You know, the reports were that City had no money. They were so strapped for cash that he would have to work on a budget, and he'd done that already. And then as soon as they got the money, I thought...
He's the wrong man to buy
these. I don't know if he's going to do it.
I was a complete idiot with Hughes because I backed him right up until the end, and I didn't think at the time that he should have been sacked. And it's only with hindsight that I'll look back and go, what the hell were you thinking?
I sort of forget the bad sort of times under Hughes and remember the better times like that of Bayor. Some laughs, some joys that we had.
That knee slide. Well, I mean, we talked about it recently on the Patreon, but that knee slide was it was the moment the penny dropped and everybody went, "Oh, I see what he's doing."
Yeah, I got called a glory hunter the night that we signed Adebayor.
You are.
I just got back from Interrail, and the only garment that I had that I didn't bring on holidays for 2 weeks was a City shirt in my wardrobe, so I wore it to a party that night.
You tramp.
I know. Yeah. And it was a glory hunter because we signed Adebayor that day.
God, it's amazing the memories this brings back, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, where were you when you found out about it, the takeover?
I was on holiday in Turkey. I just remember, like, we sat down for a meal and there was a massive screen on the side and it was just, like, slowly ticker-taping along on the red thing. And it was like... bids have been put in for Mario Gomez and Dimitar Berbatov, and it's slowly ticking along. And I just remember, like, this United fan walking past the restaurant to stop, and he's just like that. And then it just went from Manchester, and then it come up City like that as the thing come past, and you just seen this jaw drop, go, "Oh, what? It's them and not us." Yeah. And it was absolutely perfect. Then later on that night, couldn't get any internet reception, so I remember just texting my mum and saying, "Just tell me who we've signed before we go to bed." And it was like, got this text message when I'd been out. I was a bit pissed. I was like, "Rubinho?" I was like, she must have got that confused. He signed for Chelsea. I was like, my mum's clearly got this wrong. And it was like, no, we've actually signed Rubinho.
My brother woke me up that day to tell me that City had been taken over, but I kind of had in my head...
Christmas?
Yeah, honestly. City had been taken over.
But
I thought it was going to be another Portsmouth or another Newcastle. I didn't ever think we were going to go the right way with that takeover. I thought we were going to. I thought the takeover itself was going to be
typical. Sulaiman Al-Fahim didn't give a great impression of it, to be fair. Yeah.
The only kind of reference point you had at that stage as well for so many City fans was either Francis Lee or Taksin Sinawatra.
Yeah.
And like the case studies so far hadn't been great.
That's it. But then following the sort of Berbatov thing all day was funny. Because didn't Fergie like pick him up in his own car or something from the airport?
Yeah, he smuggled him into Carrington, I think.
Yeah. So you were just like, it was a bit of a laugh. You know, it was like a car chase going on with City that day. That was funny. And then I was working that evening and... we come out of the restaurant into the bar that was adjoined to it, and Eugene Valentine, the barman, said, "You've signed Rubinho," and I said, "Oh no, I'm a City fan," and he said, "Yeah, no, you've signed Rubinho," and then he turned on, like, the bar was in darkness, it was closed, and he turned on the little telly and was like, "Watch Sky Sports News there," and it came along the yellow at the bottom. I was just like, "Is this absolutely for real?"
Eugene Valentine.
Oh, you should see him, man. He's brilliant.
Did you tell him you were going to name check him in the show?
Because that
was a name drop.
No, I thought,
I don't know who this man is.
Oh, he's great. You should meet him. He's brilliant. His nickname's Wee Angry. He's mad as the day is long. he's the best barman in County Down, honest to God. The Donner Bar. Liverpool fan. He's a great guy.
I've done three shows this season. There's been promo for other companies.
He's just a good mate.
This podcast is sponsored by Eugene Valentine.
He's sound as fuck. You should meet him. I'll take his in there for a pint. You don't even drink. You can have a little glass of Vimto. So he turned the TV on in the little sidebar that was closed and shut up shop, and there I was, stood just aghast. Now here we are.
Well, I mean, you mentioned about the Adebayor slide. There's so many things that it opened the door to that were just that would have been like we never would have had the chance to. We talk in this week's patron show is all about City in the Champions League, but would City have ever got to the Champions League if it wasn't for the cash injection? Would you ever have had the moments like, you know,
just not having silver?
Yeah,
I just imagine just not having silver, like silver. Yeah, Aguero. You'd never have Aguero.
One other thing that I wanted to ask about the takeover, because I find this interesting. Do you ever worry for future generations that have never experienced what it was like before the takeover?
Considering, you know, my wife's expecting right now, no, not really. Because I think one of the things is, like, you pass down stories, don't you? Like, City isn't just, you know, about your own personal experiences. It's about heritage and conversations and talking in houses and talking in pubs and stuff like that.
I will say there's something different about City when it comes to... I mean different, not in a negative way, because when you look at how City celebrate their past, City fans are perversely proud of the way the club could do stupid stuff.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean?
I have no doubt in my mind that we will... just because we're in a purple patch at the minute, we will continue to do stupid stuff. We'll just do it on a different level than what we used to.
If we stop doing stupid stuff, that would be the end for us. We need to. That's in the DNA of the club. I'm loath to use that term, but it is. If you weren't typical City anymore and you didn't do ridiculous things that get other people talking,
typical City will never go away.
Well, you would like to think that we'll always do ridiculous things. But it annoys me a little bit that the ridiculous things that we're doing now are so easy to take the piss out of. Like, let's say the most recent stupid thing that I remember us doing was that ridiculous if you love Man City, clap your hands.
The video
that popped up. Like, that's horrible, because that is a stupid thing that other people laugh at. But we can't really laugh at that, because we're watching that through... You know, we're watching that from behind a cushion and, you know, mortified for ourselves, because it's like crass and commercial.
And actually, when you compare that to holding the ball by the corner flag to safely get relegated, there's no competition.
Yeah. No, but this season we've held the ball by... Well, last season we held the ball by the corner flag to win a game at Old Trafford to rip the mick out of them.
But that was funny.
That's typical City won't die, but it will change. So, like... What Kieran, the advert that Kieran's using there as an example, it's like we could laugh about it and we weren't even that particularly embarrassed by it, because it was cringeworthy, but we were distanced from it. Whereas if we were crap, then it would be much more difficult. Like, that to me is on a par with when we were playing Bolton and what did we hit the bar 6 or 7 times?
And lost 1-0. Yeah.
And we lost 1-0. But we piped in bloody psycho chants over the tannoy. Do you remember that during the game?
Yeah, yeah.
That is one of the most mortifying experiences I've ever had in the ground. And I wanted the earth to swallow me up. I thought, this is pathetic. Whereas I think if we were absolutely crap and we'd have released that video last year, I would have felt the exact same. But because we won, it didn't matter.
I take the point. I mean, one final thing on the Mansour era before we move on. I'm loath to say favourite moment, because everybody's going to immediately go to what happened in 2012, more or less, maybe last season now. But I mean, I just want one kind of human moment from you, that one thing that stands out on a personal level as something that maybe you never thought you'd see, and then there it was.
I quite like Martin De Michelis running with the Premier League trophy.
Yeah,
ponytail. Flopping, and somebody put it to the Titanic music as well. That was gorgeous.
That was Sean, wasn't it, that did that first?
Yeah.
As trivial as it sounds, like, obviously, the Aguero moment, you want to think of different ones. You want to think about, like, the amount of times that we've just levered United has been brilliant. Like, to narrow it down to like, actual specific moments, the joy in company's face from scoring that goal was just absolutely unbelievable.
Right, well, moving on, it's Newcastle up next in the Premier League for City. After 2 points dropped in the Wolves game, how important... I mean, it's difficult to sit here and say it's a must-win game because it's the fourth game of the season, but how important is it to not let that affect them and to kind of get back into the flow of things? Because last season, you know, they built last season on, you know, a succession of wins and being able to come back from setbacks.
It's Newcastle.
Well, I mean, we've got the obvious Aguero hat-trick incoming because he loves Newcastle.
It's Newcastle. Like, It is literally the ideal. Newcastle at home is our ideal game, whether before money or after money. Like, it's. I think, am I right that we've got more points against them than any other Premier League team?
I think, yeah, and I think...
Just overtaking Villa, has it? Or
yeah,
like
and
that,
I think
yeah.
It's the longest winning streak against any side.
Yeah, and Aguero scored a ridiculous amount of
140
goals.
Against, you know, one team. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Aguero registers a goal or an assist every 31 minutes against Newcastle at the Etihad.
Fantasy check. League captain, folks,
check
there you go.
Check you out, Statle.
I know, I don't know what came over me. It's important that we... It's important that we win at the weekend. It's an international break after that as well. Everybody seems to be jumping on the fact that City drawing against Wolves compared to last season is a problem, but we drew against Everton early on last season as well, so we're in the exact same position as we were after three games. Hopefully we can go on a run now. Obviously, that would be nice. City always win the league in an even number year, which sounds like it's a flippant comment from me, but actually an even number year brings with it a tournament in the summer. So one of the reasons that we've struggled so much to hold on to the title and to defend it is that we've always won it in a tournament summer.
Coming off the back of a tournament.
So be it the Euros or be it the World Cup. And we were bandying around the stats in the summer that was brilliant. We were all dead proud of it that 16 City players went to the World Cup. But actually, in hindsight, we're kind of living to regret that a little bit because nobody got a good rest. And 16 of our players have had a mentally and physically strenuous summer. So when you look at De Bruyne's injured now and Sané's not at his best, Fernandinho's looking a little bit leggy and a little bit ropey, it would be nice to kind of get this win under our belt, hopefully touch wood, win convincingly, and then go into the break, the international break, because actually a few of our players haven't been recalled to their international squad, so they can maybe get a 2-week break, which would be quite pleasant.
When you look at Newcastle's performance against Chelsea, they were arguably very unlucky with a dodgy penalty decision, perhaps, and you know they were dogged in defence. They haven't offered a lot this season so far, Newcastle. So I mean,
they got beat by a poor Forest side the other night.
I was going to say
unlucky too.
You can only really see them trying one thing, can't you? And you can't really see it working.
I really like Newcastle, and in terms of another team in the league that I'd have a fondness for, it would be them. I really feel sorry for the fans with
same
what
here,
Ashley's
yeah.
done. I think it's an absolute disgrace. I think Benitez is a top class manager. I think they have got. I wouldn't go along with fully that they've got a championship squad, but it's not that much better than that. I think it's a team that's probably, you're looking at about the 17th best squad in the league. So they are going to struggle with the way that they are hamstrung by an absolutely god-awful owner.
They made 40 million off signings in the summer and didn't buy anybody. The window
they
shut.
Bought House of Fraser.
The window shut, and literally the day after that, he bought House of Fraser.
Yeah.
That is an absolute disgrace. We've had a glorious 10 minutes there talking about our takeover and how lucky we've been, and you have to pinch yourself. We've won the lottery. There's no two ways about it. And their club has been taken over by a vile human being. He's disgusting. He spitefully seems to be rubbing it in the fans' faces now that he's got... It's just pure power play all the time. To buy House of Fraser the day after the window shut, after spending no money on players, that's awful. So we could have been the reason why I kind of bring that up is that that could have been us. We could have been, as Casey's just said, they're 16th, 17th in the league. They finished 10th last season with Rafa Benitez. What a manager, brilliant manager, very successful man. And they should be kicking on, but instead, now we talked about luck there as well. They're opening games, Chelsea, Spurs. Us.
They played well against Spurs, to be
yeah,
fair.
But they've been beaten 2-1 by both Chelsea and Spurs, like defending doggedly. They went 5 at the back against Chelsea. We've come up against a different, but in Casey's technical and tactical analysis earlier on, Wolves 5 at the back wasn't really a 5 at the back. But if you remember at St James' Park last year, they set up basically 5-5-0 against us. Shelby was giving the ball back to Ederson, and then they were just standing off.
Mm-hmm.
So you can probably expect that at home at 5:30 on Saturday, but I think we should have enough in the tank. We'll be fired up, and Pep will have been merciless, I reckon. Some of the sloppiness on Saturday against Wolves will you would imagine be ironed out.
Well, you said before it might have brought everybody back down to earth.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not really good news for Newcastle, is it?
You would like to have thought so. I don't know whether I've mentioned this or not, but Sergio Aguero either registers a goal or an assist every 31 minutes.
Against. You've done your research, haven't you?
He's read one stat. He's read one tweet by somebody else.
Right, so after a flying start to the season, we've had two losing weeks on the bounce, so it'd be nice to have a winner on the charity bet this week. William Hill has given each Blue Moon podcaster a £10 correct score single for City's games, and all of the winnings are going to the Christie Cancer Hospital in Manchester. The total for the season stands at £100, so let's see if we can't add to that. Kieran, what are you going for?
I've gone for 3-1, same as last season. Also a tribute to the fact that Sergio Aguero registers an assist or a goal every 31 minutes.
3-1 is 10-1, so £100. You'll double the pot if you're right. KC, what are you having?
I've gone for my traditional 6-1.
6-1. I really hope you're right, because that's 35-1. It would be, I think, our biggest win at £350. So, you know, Godspeed, fingers crossed for you. I've gone 4-0, which is actually a rather measly 7-1. So it's a £70 if I'm right. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more information about responsible gambling, visit begambleaware.org.
The Blue Moon Podcast Best Bits.
He kind of jumps on me back, Tevez. He's never getting to the ball, so I'm just shielding the ball. And as he does it, he just jumps and he kind of like swings his arm across me. So he's tried to punch me. In my eyes, he's tried to punch me. I know what he's done. He knows what he's done. So as I look around, it's clear that Linesman hasn't spotted it. Mike Dean hasn't spotted it. And I don't like Tevez anyway. Didn't like him and from playing against him. So I thought, you're getting a bit like... So I've the red mist descended. So I'm thinking no one's watching because they've already missed the first one. So I've just waited for him to come behind me and just elbowed him in the face. Obviously, he's gone down. And no one's seen it, but obviously the linesman has seen him gone down. He's flagged. And then Aguero and all is running over. And no one's seen it. And Aguero runs over to Mike Dean and says, he's elbowed him. So... I'm thinking I might get away with the yellow yet anyway, red card. And at that point, I'm just like, right, just take one of these off with you. You know, Bobby Zamora came over and said, take one with you. So at that point, I'm like, if I can even it up, because a draw is a good result for us. We stay up on a draw. And I'm not wanting City to win the league.
Hear the full interview on our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
I'm Joey Barton, this is the Blue Moon Podcast.
So then it's time to finish with Ask the Panel. This is the bit of the show where you send in your questions and we dodge around the answers until we feel like we've done enough on them. So at Blue Moon Podcast is the best way to do it on Twitter. You can also email bluemoonpodcast@gmail.com or get us on the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. First up, Jack Miller has been in touch through the website. What do you think of the Champions League draw now that City are in pot one of the new system?
Can we just remind the listeners who we... drew in the Champions League.
Well, have you forgotten yourself?
Yes.
It was Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yes.
Lyon.
Yes.
And Hoffenheim.
Hoffenheim, okay.
Yeah, Hoffenheim. And who did you think Hoffenheim were before?
No, I didn't think... Right. We had a PlayStation game based on Formula 1. And Murray Walker was a commentator, and I just remember always hearing, and it's go, go, go at Hoffenheim.
But yeah, then like I said, it's go, go, go at Hockenheim.
Right.
Yeah, isn't it in Gelsenkirchen?
I have no idea.
Or I made that up. Yeah.
It might be, I don't know.
And I think they're...
I don't even know British geography, mate. I'm not going to know what's going on in Europe.
I might be completely wrong on that, but I think they are similar. I think they're in the Ruhr region, similar to like Schalke and Dortmund. I think so, but I might be completely wrong. It's better than Hockenheim.
It is. I mean, it is at least the right place.
Right, go on. What do you know about Lyon then, Kieran?
the women's team are good.
Knock City out of the Champions League a few times.
Yeah.
Lyon generally play decent football. In the past couple of years, it's between them and Marseille for who's been the third best team in France after obviously PSG and Monaco. Traditionally, up until the PSG takeover, I think they won the league 8 times in a row, Lyon. They've got some decent players, but obviously they lost Lacazette at the start of last season, and they almost lost Fekir this summer, who doesn't seem particularly happy to be there, even though that's their boyhood team. I'll be honest with you, I've not seen Fekir play a lot, but the fact that Liverpool were interested in him means he must be half decent, and the fact that he seemed all right when he came off the bench for France in the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, though, when you look at how the draw's been done, City obviously won the league, so they go into pot one. The system is a lot fairer now, isn't it? I mean, you think back to the number of times where, well, the two times previously where City were going in as defending champions in England and ended up with ridiculously difficult groups because of the way the seeding system worked.
I'd genuinely rather have a free draw in it, though. Because, you know...
I'm all for separating the teams from the same country.
I suppose, yeah. But I'd genuinely just have a complete free draw. I mean, I understand why seeding's there, but the state of that Lokomotiv Moscow group, that's not even a Europa League group. And then you've not even really got a group of death this year. Like, they're all pretty straightforward for most of the top teams. You know, Spurs are unlucky, but, you know, Spurs will still get out of that group, really. And I just think it kind of ruins it. Even this year, we've got Shakhtar, who we had in the group stages last year. And to me, the whole point, certainly for me growing up, what I enjoyed about watching on the Champions League as a neutral, which I had to be then because obviously we were a million miles away from it, was the fact that you got to see different teams play different teams every year. I mean, I don't want to see Bayern Munich play Real Madrid again. I'm sick of it. I don't want to see Chelsea play Barcelona again. I'm sick to death of it. As a neutral, it doesn't hold any interest or wonder for me anymore when that keeps happening. I would just prefer a free draw.
It's the classic elite and the traditional, those traditional big clubs, as it were, seem to have an awful lot of sway. So that's why it's always going to be there or thereabouts in the last eight. Very similar, hugely established big teams. The odd time somebody comes along and puts the cat amongst the pigeons. But nine times out of ten, you got the same winner. The last three seasons has been the same winner, very admirably, and they've done great. But that's not really what we want to see, is it?
Yeah, mix it up a bit, lads.
Yeah, yeah.
Happy with the draw?
You've got to be. The away fans will be very happy because they get to go to
two new places,
and that's great. I mean, I don't feel envious at all when I see people booking flights away to European destinations over the winter. As spectacles, I don't think there are anything. We should get out of the group comfortably. I would like us to go further than the last eight.
It's just whether they run into Liverpool again.
That's
isn't it?
It.
That's the thing.
Kryptonite.
Just a bogey side, isn't it?
Yeah.
But genuinely, I think it's a decent enough draw. I think we've got some good teams there. We've not really got any particularly poor teams. I think that's really all you can hope for at this point, because the way that the seeding is, because we were in pot one, the draw didn't really matter. You know, I think we would have been sat here with pretty much the same reaction with whatever draw we would have got.
I think it's a worrying indictment on the way we think about things that I'm genuinely more excited for the Carabao Cup draw, Oxford United away.
Well, I was going to say, I was going to touch on this just before we moved on. It's a bizarrely odd feeling to get a draw like that.
Yeah. They must have forgot to put City's ball in the microwave for this year.
it's cubes anyway, isn't it, for the Carabao Cup?
Who's watched a Carabao Cup draw? Come on, David.
Why have you just pissing my bonfire like that?
I don't know. I just...
Wasn't the Carabao Cup draw like last year at one
all
point?
Right,
like
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, all right?
Yeah, so that feels like a Man United draw, that. And they've mixed up the Manchesters this year for once. to get Oxford... What league are Oxford in?
What do you know about Oxford then?
Loads. There's a university there, but... that's literally
is
it.
That it? Is that,
I know, Oxford I know comma.
I know loads. There's two things.
And finally, Logan Armstrong's been in touch through the website to ask, why do you think we're not seeing the likes of Foden and Diaz as much as we'd like?
That's a good question, Logan. Because time is on their side, I reckon. Phil Foden is looking very good, very accomplished. He doesn't look out of place. He's registered a couple of assists. He's very much within the fold of our squad at the moment. As we touched upon earlier, I don't think there is such a thing as a first 11 at Manchester City anymore. And somebody is going to be missing out every week to be on the bench. But if you take that even further, somebody's going to be missing out and won't even be with the squad. And it's been Delph a couple of times. It'll be Diaz. It'll be Foden. I imagine you'll see both of those boys playing away at Oxford, and we'll get a good look at them then. That'll be a great game for them to play in. And yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, we get the Champions League games wrapped up fairly early, and maybe they'll play in a few. We'll end up with dead rubbers and that, and we'll see them. Time is on their side, Logan, and I think if we be patient with them, we'll be all right. I'd like to see them more, but we need 3 points in every game at the moment, and they're just too young at the moment. Pretty much, there's experience ahead of them.
I'm pleasantly surprised with how much Foden's played this season. I wanted him to play more towards the back end of last season, don't get me wrong. To be perfectly honest with you, I think if Diaz's contract situation and he wasn't in the last year of it, I think he'd have been sent out on loan. I think he's only been kept as to try and butter him up to sign a new contract because he will be worth a lot of money. Putting my cynical head on, which is always on.
It's usually off, I was going to say, never usually off, is it?
But I think Foden will play. I think Foden will play. I think he'll start probably less than 5 games, but I think he'll make more than 20 appearances, which I think for a player of his age, I think for a...
In a team of City's level as well.
I think is very good. And I think in this time in 2 years, I think he'll be starting pretty one of the first names on the team sheet. I think he's that good. I don't know whether Brahim will make it. I think he's a very good player. I think he's like a just... He's a Champions League pot two player for me. I think he would walk. I think within the next couple of years, he'd walk into any of the teams in Champions League pot two, whether he's a pot one player. Hopefully, he proves me wrong.
All right, it's a wait and see. Kieran Clark, Kieran Murray, thank you very much.
Ta, mate.
Thanks, David Minnie.
Thank you very much for listening. We've got an extra special bonus show as well for our Patreon backers. That's for $2 a month. You'll get an extra at least 10 minutes a week. This week we're talking about the Champions League and maybe why City fans haven't really got on board with the competition. So do go and check that out. We'll see you in 7 days' time.
Was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.